Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to Animal Instinct on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Denise Herman, sitting in this week for Celia Kucher. I'm a dog trainer in New York City, and if you're a regular listener, you might know that I've been interviewed twice before on Animal Instinct, and I'm so excited that Celia invited me to take over the show for her this week while she's away. I'm really thrilled to have in the studio this week Juliet Sternberg of Hope Veterinary in Brooklyn. Juliet is one of the founding partners of Hope Veterinary and is the organizer of Hope's Palliative Care and Pet Support Group, which has been operating in Brooklyn for over a decade. Juliet is also a licensed master social worker and is the founder of SWAHAB, Social Workers Advancing the Human-Animal Bond, whose mission is to recognize and promote the healthy relationship individuals have with animals and the powerful bond that can exist between them. Beyond basic veterinary services, Hope offers individual bereavement counseling, pet family counseling, and pet hospice services. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Thanks. I want to give people a little bit of background. You know, I met you through a couple of mutual friends a while ago, but then came to know you better when last month my dog of 14 years passed away, and I was going through, you know, the grieving process with her, and I knew about your pet bereavement group and came in and sat in on that. So we have that history together, and when Celia asked me to sit in for her and do the show, I thought, well, it might not be the most fun up topic, but I think there's a real need for it, and having personally gone through it lately, I thought we could talk about that and give people some help, because if you have a pet, at some point you have to deal with loss.
Yeah, it's often the very first time that a lot of people experience loss. Sometimes people have had grandparents die or something, but as an adult, it's often their very first loss.
Yeah, I mean, I know that with my dog, it certainly was in some ways more traumatic than my father, than losing my father, because my dog was, as an adult, my dog was with me every single day.
That's right.
Day in, day out. My parents, not so much, you know, because I'm an adult at that point.
Right. Pets are with you day in, day out. They go on vacation with you. They're with you all the time. And humans come in and out of your lives. You have fights with them. You don't see them for years. And pets are just there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little, there's more sometimes acrimonious levels and layers with humans. So your background actually is in social work, though, not veterinary or pet services. What was the catalyst for the work you began with people and pets? How did that evolve?
So I was doing geriatric social work, looking after older people on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and some of those people had pets. And what a lot of people think of the Upper East Side as is these huge apartment buildings with elevators. But in reality, in Yorkville especially, they're brownstones. They may be five stories, and people moved there in their 20s and when they were able to go up all the stairs. But now they are literally homebound in the fifth floor with their pets. So if those pets get into trouble, if they get sick, they can't get out. So they can't get out to see a vet. I was taking care of one person in particular whose little chihuahua had actually licked her awake from a diabetic coma, and this chihuahua was starting to have breast tumors. She had never spayed her, and years later she was having all these symptoms, but she couldn't get out to see a vet. And so I had known Christine Young, my partner at the time, and we asked her to come and see my client, and that really spawned the whole thing. When we were sitting there on the floor examining this pet and realizing that we had nowhere to take her, starting doing the work together, we realized what a need there was for human veterinarians to get together with social workers to help both the human and the pet at the same time. And this really wasn't restricted to just older people, but everybody needs
these things. Yeah, there wasn't any infrastructure for that.
Right,
and yet,
exactly.
That couldn't be the only dog. That couldn't be the only person having that issue, not just there, but globally. Even,
right.
You know.
And it's not just older people, but across the society, there's this need.
So that was the first one.
Yep.
Wow. Now I've heard the first one. So HOPE offers an entire array of palliative care and hospice services. What does palliative care for pets encompass?
So the hospice movement started in England, ironically, I think in the 60s when there was a woman realizing that there was really a need to not over-treat people who were terminally ill, but to palliative, so to comfort, not to cure, is what palliative means. And so we've taken that to the pet services and when an animal receives a terminal diagnosis. In the past, it used to be pretty common to just say, well, let's euthanize right away, and because for sure the animal is going to suffer. But now with drugs, with fluids, with nutrition, we're realizing that we can get a good 6 to 8 weeks, at least, depending on when the terminal diagnosis is made, for people to say a good goodbye to their animals. And not to euthanize right away. So when it comes to the point of putting an animal to sleep, everybody's ready. The animal is ready to go, and the people are really ready to let them go, and they're in a place where they feel like they've done everything they can, and that the animal has had a really good quality of life for that 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, or possibly longer.
Or possibly longer. It really depends when it's caught.
But I mean, I know I came to your partner, to Christine, Dr. Young, for exactly that same thing with my dog. You know, right. She had, you know, an enlarged heart. She had cancer. She had some other things going on, and some we weren't even going to go deep and find out what they were because some, right. You know, the other things weren't treatable. But I knew I wanted to get as much time out of it as I could, if it could be good time.
Yeah, exactly. And now we can make it very good time. The pain medication has dramatically improved over the last few years, and with steroids and much better nutrition, animals are really able to live very well for that time.
My dog was on, you know, heart medicine and stuff like that, which I don't know that they even thought about giving to dogs,
right.
20 or 30 years ago. Why would you waste heart medicine on just a dog? But it's so much different now, the way pets are integrated into our lives. They are, you know, our families.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't even have to be that expensive a treatment either, because most of it can be done at home. So once you teach people how to do those treatments, they can really do
even people are doing some injections at home for dogs.
Absolutely.
With diabetes and things like that are just chronic illnesses. Yeah. And the dogs, that would have maybe been a life sentence before as well.
Yes, exactly.
That's great to hear. But those are really, we're talking about pretty avant-garde services, even nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are kind of shocked probably sometimes. Was it hard when you started doing this, you know, over 10 years ago, maybe to get people to understand? Was it so new that they just didn't know how to conceive of it?
I think a lot of people thought that I was you, essentially, that I was the dog trainer, that I was there to be the therapist for the dog. And then you say, well, no, I'm not really. I can certainly help with the dog and cat behavioral issues, but I'm really there to be the therapist for you. I'm there to be the support for you, in the same way that a social worker in a pediatric hospital might behave. That essentially veterinary medicine is pediatric medicine, because you're treating the mm-hmm. child of the family there, mm-hmm. and the main thing is to help the parents to be able to handle the child.
Yeah, and it can't, you know, like a child, it can't necessarily advocate for itself. You have to
exactly.
go through the caregiver, the guardian.
Exactly.
Was, you know, when you started this, was there any training that there was for mental health professionals, for social workers, about counseling people and pets? Did your social work training, you know, bring you to a place for that? Was there anything to fall back on?
Not specifically about pets. Unfortunately, social work school is still very focused on just the regular human family. And there's not, as far as I know, still a lot of emphasis on pets as part of the family. I think that is going to come. It has to, because pets are increasingly so much more a part of the family. But I think all the training that we have as social workers around just how to help families interact as well as they possibly can and function as well as they possibly can certainly relates to animals as much as it does to humans.
Are there things in place now for social workers to get that sort of training, or people who want to be counseling people specifically that have pets? Is that part of the regular curriculum now?
It is not yet, as far as I know. No, it still
seems like a giant glaring error, frankly. I'm really glaring because with the numbers of pets going up
exactly.
and the treatments.
I think like many professions, we lag a bit behind our clients, but hopefully we'll get there.
Can I plug your group that you started now? I really want to do that. You started a group called Social Workers Advancing the Human-Animal Bond, SWAHAB, right? Tell me briefly about what they do.
So we realized that there was this glaring need for social workers to start seeing animals more part of the family. And I had started to meet a few people, few social workers, I guess because they were attracted to Hope Vet, being run by a social worker, and started to have conversations around we should really be getting together to share stories and to try advocating both to the social work profession and sharing with each other around best practices and around resources. So we started a group about 10 years ago, and it meets monthly at the National Association of Social Workers in New York City. And it's really been a terrific resource for about somewhere between 50 and 100 people on the listserv.
Yeah, and it doesn't. You don't have to just be a social worker or a mental health counselor. You could be someone who just wants to be more aware of how to help people that have animals.
Right, exactly.
Excellent. Yeah. So we're going to take a break in a second. When we come back, though, we are going to talk to you about the pet loss support group that you have over at Hope Vet that you run weekly for free and have for 10 years, correct?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay, excellent. So we're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back and do that.
When you travel in the book I mentioned, don't forget your remote control. Experience destination, a book with a traveling soul.
You're listening to Down to Earth by Eric Maltz on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
We're thrilled to announce a special event, the Silver Snail 25 Years of Slow Food. This event is hosted by Slow Food USA, Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's Pizza. It's been 25 years since Carlo Petrini and a group of activists launched a peaceful revolution to defend regional traditions, good food, gastronomic pleasure, and the slow pace of life. The slow food movement has since evolved into a comprehensive approach to food that recognizes strong connections between plate, planet, people, politics, and culture. Today, this movement involves thousands of projects and millions of people in more than 160 countries worldwide. Join us for a dialogue between Slow Food's founder, Carlo Petrini, and locavore activist, Alice Waters, as they reflect on the evolution of the food movement and all things slow. Friday, October 3rd from 11:30 to 2:30. You can go to our website and click on the link on the right-hand side of the page to RSVP. We can't wait to see you there.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
So we're back with Juliet Sternberg of Hope Veterinary, and we are talking today about how to cope with grief and loss after a pet has passed away or might be diagnosed with a terminal illness. Juliet, you founded a free drop-in group for people dealing with the loss of a pet or a terminally ill pet, the Palliative Care and Pet Loss Support Group, which is a mouthful, which is free, and, you know, it's a really amazing, actually. Free and open to anyone, client or not. It's mm-hmm. at the veterinary practice, but you don't have to be a client to come to the group.
Correct.
And such a wonderful community outreach. Can you describe how the group works and what types of things might come up in the group on any given week?
Yeah. So anyone can come, as you just said, which means that sometimes there's one person, sometimes there's five people, rarely much more than that, many more than that. And topics tend to revolve around, obviously, the loss. For a lot of people, they're needing help with not only coping with the loss, but also that this is a normal experience. And for a lot of people, it is the first time, and they've never experienced anything quite as intense as they're experiencing right now. And a lot of people will feel like they're going crazy. That they just played God with deciding when to put their animal to sleep, and they're filled with both guilt and worry and sometimes remorse, and as well as all the feelings of depression and loss and feeling like they're going crazy. So to be in a group and hearing that other people are experiencing the same kinds of things and that the feelings that they're experiencing are both normal and good, and an appropriate experience to a tremendous loss.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's partially, I was thinking while you were talking that, you know, grieving for our pets isn't something that we have a barometer for how it's supposed to look, because right. we do it privately, you know, right. we don't have, maybe more recently, but you didn't have funerals for your pets,
that's right.
you didn't have novena cards for them, you didn't have that kind of thing, and if you don't see how other people do it, you think maybe they just don't.
Right, exactly. No, you start realizing why funerals and memorial services and things exist for humans. It's really not so much about the person who's died. It's about coming together as a community for the person, for the spouse maybe of the person who's died. There's a tremendous job to be done in planning the funeral and memorial, and that sort of occupies them while they're going through the initial stages of grief. And there's nothing like that for the pet. There's nothing that brings a whole community of people together to be supportive for the family that has just lost.
Yeah. Well, your group now, yeah. luckily.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's, you know, that must be half of what's at least helpful about it, is just literally sitting in the room with other people and knowing that you're all in the same boat. And going, these people don't look crazy. They're functioning. They're
right.
nice people.
Right.
They don't seem like wacky wackos about their animals. So I'm normal because they're normal.
Right, exactly. And sharing the stories of how they all got to that point can be really comforting for people.
Is that one of the things, kind of, you know, when you have to talk to people in the group, do you guide it a little bit, or is it fairly organic?
Yeah, it really varies. We try to encourage people to share as much as they want to share. Some people are more comfortable doing that than others, obviously. And people will come for maybe 2 to 3 sessions, sometimes much longer, but often only once. And then sometimes they'll come back again months later.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, as much as I was thinking, you know, how individual grief is to the person, but also probably very individual to each different pet. And do you have people that come back if a second pet, you know, if their other pet dies,
yeah.
and they're, you know, like, this was so helpful.
Yeah, they'll sometimes do that. Or they'll sometimes come back when they're considering adopting again some months later. And sometimes that can even bring up a lot of feelings of guilt, that maybe the animal that's died will be mad at me because they'll think that I'm that I'm adopting again and therefore I'm not in love with you anymore.
Which reminds me, you know, another thing that you do is you do sort of a general, beyond the grief counseling group, you do a general counseling for people around all sorts of pet-related issues that have to do with the family or couples and their pets, and anywhere where there's multiple organisms, there's dynamics.
There certainly are.
So you have other things like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's often, as with any children, there are issues in the family, and sometimes when the children misbehave, then it creates all sorts of ripples in the family.
Yeah.
So.
Is there any difference in the group when there's someone who hasn't lost their pet yet, as far as, you know, they're dealing with nursing the pet and caring for the pet, and it's, you know, it's got a terminal diagnosis, which may not be, you know, this month or this week, or it may be.
Yeah, it's interesting. We used to really think that we had to separate those two groups, that the people who hadn't experienced the loss yet should really be separated from the people who are experiencing grief. But then we came to realize that that both groups really needed each other, that the ones that had experienced the loss were really able to be supportive to the ones that were about to go through it.
That seems like a nice thing. I could see that working together, but not knowing right away that it was going to.
Yeah, exactly. And then the people who were about to lose were really able to reflect on and help the people that were grieving and saying, it sounds like you did all that you could have done.
Yeah. Are there special different things that you recommend for people to help them when they have a terminally ill pet? Just different things that end up coming up in conversation that are the things you talk about with them?
Yeah, people really need to monitor their own feelings and their own ability to cope, and really gathering resources for themselves during that time. It can be an incredibly intense time. Almost everybody says it's quite a life-changing experience, this nursing. This paradox of knowing that this animal that you're getting closer and closer and closer to is going to leave soon.
Yeah.
And getting deeper into a place where you're falling more and more deeply in love, all the while knowing that you're going to lose, is this tremendous paradox for people.
Yeah.
So, people need to be very aware of their own needs and their own feelings, and take care of themselves and take time out doing whatever it is that comforts them during that time.
I've had several, you know, many of my friends that I've been with when they've, you know, had to put their pet to sleep, or, you know, after it's died, or sometimes tragic things as well. But certainly when they've made the decision that it's time, I've always felt like, trusted them, that you love this animal so much. If you say that it's time, I know it's either... It is about you, and it's about them, and it's about that together. And do you find that you ever question that? Or I don't know. I know. I always think you would know. I don't ever, you know, I just think you're, yes, let's, okay, I support you.
Yeah, it's not a black and white thing. That's the scary thing for almost everybody. It's a very gray area. When is the exact right time to put an animal to sleep? Unless they're getting into something acute.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's almost always a very great decision, and almost everybody feels like they're playing God, and that they wish that this decision wasn't theirs in a way. But it is a gift that we can give to them.
Well, we don't want them to suffer.
Right.
You know, that's
exactly.
Always the overriding thing. It's like, I don't want them to suffer, but it's hard to know how to quantify it. We look at it physically, but it's hard, you know, when I was talking with people about my dog, and the important thing I kept thinking was, I don't want her to lose her dignity, which was a way I could describe it. I couldn't quite quantify all of what went into that, but I knew that I would know if it felt like she just didn't have her dignity anymore. Like, I knew she needed to, you know, to be able to do basic dog things, whatever those were going to be.
Right. Yeah, it can be very variable for each animal for Pi, it was losing dignity. For a cat, it may be at the point that they stop eating, or they're withdrawing and they're hiding.
Mm-hmm.
For other dogs, it will be if they start peeing and pooping in the house. And then other dogs don't care.
I know, right? I know there's, you know, we've had pets where I'm like, oh, she would never do that. If she's doing that, she's not herself,
right?
You know? You know, is grieving, one thing I wanted to ask you about, because it comes up as well. I deal with a lot of families, and you deal with, you know, families coming in. Is there any specialized way that people can help their children deal with, you know, a dying or a pet that has just passed away? Anything you think of with them that's pretty good, solid, you know, across the board advice? Because, you know, one size all advice is perfect. So let's have some of that just real quick.
Five seems to be the age that children kind of get the permanence of death. Up until that point, they really don't really get how permanent it is, and they'll talk about the pet just coming back when will we see them again? And then they'll fairly quickly forget them. After five, they both remember them long term and understand that they aren't coming back. So the general advice seems to be to not use euphemisms. Don't say that the pet is going to sleep. Don't say
that. When is he waking up?
Right, exactly.
It's Christmas, or that, is he waking up today?
Or that they get very afraid that if they go to sleep, then they won't wake up. So really using the words death.
Yeah.
And really using the words ending is good. I mean, when we were all kids, Fluffy went off to live with Great Aunt Flo in Canada and was never heard from again. And only years later did you realize that Mom actually took Fluffy down to be euthanized. But now I think parents are doing a much better job of really helping children through death.
That's good to hear. So beyond kids, then, what are the best ways that we can support a friend or family member who's grieving the loss of their pet? What are some things that are, you know, that we should be doing for our friends?
I think one of the main things is to realize that this does go on a long time. If your friend lost a human, then they will be grieving for a whole long time. Mm-hmm. Then somebody losing their pet, they're not going to get over it in a weekend.
Yeah.
So continuing to reach out to them, realizing that in some ways the whole first year is going to be rough. All the anniversaries that you go through are going to be rough. But certainly reaching out to them, letting them know that you're there, letting them know that you can be there to be a support, going out, doing something, whatever it is that's comforting to them.
I think a lot of people, you know, wonder, should they bring it up? I mean, I feel like, bring it up. Yeah. My instinct is bring it up when, you know, it's been rather than, you know, avoid it. And that could parallel human stuff. I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday whose mother and dog passed away within 3 months.
Whoa.
The dog unexpectedly, the mother not unexpectedly. But, you know, we were talking about, you know, all of that and bringing it up again.
Yeah.
And it seems like you should, but people worry, I think, about, like, I don't want to bring it up because that's going to make you feel bad. And it's like, no, I already feel kind of bad. It's better to just get it out, and it's sweet that you ask.
And also it really helps keeps memory alive. It keeps it, instead of the animal just disappearing, it gets them to be able to talk about the pet, the stories that they have, the fun that they had, bring back all the positive memories for them.
Yeah, I guess unless they tell you don't bring it up, unless like I don't want to talk about it, because I'm like, I'm sure there's some people like, I don't want to talk about that.
It's rare, I would say. Yeah, I think more people really want to talk about it.
What should you not do? Because maybe it's like what not to wear. Maybe what you're doing might be worse that you should stop doing.
The only bad advice is to say, when are you getting another one? Or let's go straight down and adopt now.
Yeah.
You know, pets are not microwaves. When they break, you can't just go get another one. This is a whole life that you're talking about and a whole love story that you're talking about. And you can't just replace that.
Yeah. And some people seem to want to do that, but it should
Which
be their call,
fine.
Right?
Absolutely.
As opposed to bullying them into
that's
it.
That's fine. I mean, some people need to go and get somebody else right away, and that's okay. I mean, as long as they know that they're not replacing and that they're entering into a new relationship with somebody wonderful, that's great. But not, it shouldn't be pushed.
All right. And what should you look for if you think that either you in the process of grieving, or a friend is, when is enough enough? Like, when is it too much? When should someone, not bootstrap, but when should they seek help that they're not recovering at, you know, a decent pace or that's unhealthy?
I think if people are really going for weeks without being able to function independently and effectively, if they're really struggling to get out of bed in the morning for weeks and weeks, if they're really not eating and taking care of themselves, getting to work, doing all the things that we're expected to do, they should start realizing that they're going to need to seek some help.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I feel like it's easier for people like you and I who are in animal professions to take time off. People get it. They understand it.
Right.
If I was maybe a data processor, I might not be able to say, my dog died. I can't come in today.
We usually recommend that people just say a family member has died and not.
Yeah,
not
that's
a,
great
not
advice.
A dog.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's not looked upon quite the same.
Right.
I wish it was, but all right. So, and then how can a person take care of themselves? What can the person in the moment, in the process, do for themselves to help them?
Yeah, certainly gather around resources. Think about who the people are that you really want to be with and what it is that's comforting for you at that time. There's lots of stuff online now. There's lots of great books. And whatever it is that you feel like you need is what you need, not what people are telling you to do.
Yeah. You know, in certain ways, grief is very universal, and yet it's so individual to the dog, individual to the person, you know, individual each time. Do you, how do you feel about people memorializing their pets and what different ways, is there a good memorial? Is there a bad memorial? What kinds of things have you run into? What do you think?
I think whatever people need to do is right for them. I mean, for some people, getting ashes back is a wonderful thing. For some people, will put it on the bookshelf. Other people will take it and scatter them where the pet enjoyed themselves. Mm-hmm. For some people, the strangest experience I had was somebody who taxidermied their dog's head. I don't think I could handle mm-hmm. seeing the dog mm-hmm. there, but it was right for them. Mm-hmm. But for other people, it's really not important to have a mm-hmm. permanent reminder. But for mm-hmm. some people, planting trees, mm-hmm. having little shrines in their homes, whatever it is that will help, making websites.
Yeah, those are all good ideas. I like them. We're gonna wrap up in a bit. You can find out more about Juliet and the specialty services of Hope Vet online at hopevet.com, and you guys are on Facebook as Hope Veterinary. Can you let people know where and when your group counseling meetings are?
Yeah, every Thursday evening between 7 and 8 at 390 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. 11217.
Excellent. And if you're listening outside of New York City, is there somewhere they can look for resources for specialty help with, you know, any pet-related therapy issues?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of resources online now. A lot of the veterinary hospitals will have call-in services that the students run, and the American Pet Loss and Bereavement Association has a good list of resources.
All right. That sounds like good stuff. Well, I'm Denise Herman of Empire the Dog in New York City, and I want to thank Juliet for being here and being my guest. Thank you so much. This was really great.
It was great.
You can find Empire of the Dog all over the web, Facebook, IG, and Twitter for help with vexing dog issues. This is Animal Instinct on Heritage Radio Network, and Animal Instinct is now on Facebook as well. So go there for info about past or upcoming episodes, and we will talk again soon. Thanks so much.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.